the key memory verses for the next section are
333.7.
Yeah. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 33, verse number 7. And Sri Brahma Samhita, verses 33 and 34. So they're the verses like that. Now, the open book examination topics for the next section, which we will enter into. Hands up if you did not get them.
So this is for your next open book exam. These are the topics.
Okay, so these open book examinations, this is for the final chapters 29 to 33. They are due on October the 1st. Okay, now this is absolute, October the 1st. There's no handing them away.
The 3rd or the 1st?
October the 1st. Okay, so because I'm going to India on October 25th, I want to mark them all before I go, and I want to give them back to you before I go. If you give them to me after the October the 1st, I won't accept them. Okay, so they have to be in by October the 1st. That gives you 2 months, so there's plenty of time like that. And the oral presentations can be finished around that time, as long as they're wrapped up. No later than, say, October 7th, like that. But the open book exams must be by October the 1st, that's absolute. Now, the open book examinations for the previous section, hands up if I'm going to get them tonight. Good, okay, because I'm not accepting them after tonight. Tonight's the deadline for those also. Shaker, you haven't finished it?
No.
See me after class.
Right?
You'll see me after class.
Yes.
Cool. You have a scale problem?
Oh. My lip is trembling, I'm sorry.
Just want to ask Aaron what time you might have this exam, the last exam.
Your last exam will be late September, early October. I don't know yet. When we finish chapter 33.
That will be good because some devotees are going early September.
Well, it's whenever we finish chapter 33. It should be late September, early October. I don't know the date yet.
Mm.
I'll tell you when we get closer. Like that. Okay. So what did we discuss in our previous class?
Life of a grandmaid,
one who is caused by Agamemnon, maybe,
how his soul passes, and the
Yamadutas,
and how his subtle
body
is suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Nice.
Any other thoughts?
The punishment for rectification of conditioned souls are really severe. So we have to be really Krishna conscious, very seriously.
Hmm. Okay. Good. Anything else?
For some people, suffering becomes more and more intense till death, it keeps on increasing. And they become terribly frustrated because they have so much desires, but because of their bodily condition, they are not able to fulfill their desires and enjoy. And people who die in such a consciousness, it's very, their destination is very inauspicious.
Yeah, that's good. Any other points?
One should renounce family life before attaining old age.
Okay, when you get to the age of 50, get very serious.
Mm-hmm.
If not beforehand. So, any other points? So we saw in the beginning of chapter 29, then Devahuti, she asked about three subject matters in general to Kapila Dev. She asked, please describe to me about devotional service. So then in chapter 29, Kapila Dev explained devotional service. First of all, mixed devotional service, according to the three modes of nature, and then pure devotional service, and the qualities of pure devotional service, more or less. Then, in the beginning of chapter 30, Kapila Dev begins to answer her next inquiry. She said, please explain to me about the suffering of birth and death in this material world. Because if we hear about the suffering of the conditioned souls in this material world through the repeated cycle of birth and death, the samsara chakra, we will develop detachment from this material world. And she said, please also explain to me about the time factor, about the time element. So, the beginning of chapter 30, 30, 31, 32, and 33 is answering these questions about the time factor and about the suffering of the conditioned souls within this material world. So, specifically, chapter 30 is about?
The
effects of adverse fruitive activities, which means vikarma or ugrakarma or inauspicious activities. So when the conditioned soul begins to perform inauspicious activities or vikarma, then that conditioned soul, it describes his downfall in the material world. And the more he becomes atheistic or demoniac in his consciousness, and the more he rebels against the teachings of God, the teachings of scriptures, then the more his consciousness degrades. And the more his consciousness degrades, the more he engages in sinful activity. And if one misuses the human form of life and engages in sinful activity, then one must suffer sinful reactions, especially in the next life. So it describes in the middle of the chapter how the soul is dragged, the living entity is dragged, who is a sinful personality, to the abode of Yamaraj by the Yamadutas, and the inauspicious activities which take place as he gets towards Yamaraj's abode. So now tonight we'll finish the chapter, and it will describe further some of the sinful punishments which take place. It's a very sobering chapter. Last Tuesday night when we discussed it, I felt that Krishna, some very heavy mood entered into the room. The Bhagavatam revealed itself and revealed this part of the, gave us some darshan of what it is like in hell. Like that. You could feel there was some sobriety in the room. Everyone became a little frightened by this description which is there. So that's the purpose of this section of the Bhagavatam. It's meant to strike fear into our hearts so that we'll become averse to materialistic activities and detach from the material world. So we'll finish the description tonight, which is also quite unpleasant, and hopefully we'll become more detached from the material world. And then next week, on Monday night, we'll begin chapter 31. And we'll finish chapter 33, like I said, by probably late September, I would expect. Something around that time. And then we'll have the exam.
Mm.
Like that. And then what I'll probably do is, because I'm not going to end until October 25th, so if we do finish the Bhagavatam by late September, early October, then I may do some short course on like Madhurya Kadambini or something like that, which if anyone is interested in that, then please come.
So who comes to take such souls to the heavenly planets? Are there somebody like Indra or some Dutas or something?
I haven't heard any description of anyone taking them there, but generally it's arranged that when you leave your body, then Paramatma and the Devas, they arrange for your soul to travel to its next destination. But in terms of a sinful living entity, then it is said that he is specifically taken by the Yamadutas. when one's going to Vaikuntha, one is taken by the Vishnu duties. So I'm not sure when it comes in regards to. Yeah. I've never heard of any carriers or messengers who take you there. Maybe there is, but I've never heard.
Is there anything mentioned about a person who is ethical, maybe not a spiritual, but ethical in their living? So what is their destination? What would be, like, perfect gentleman, you say, like, kind of, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, doesn't eat, non-spiritual, like doesn't believe in reincarnation and things like that. So what would be their destination?
Well, I mean, they get, because of their punya, then they get rewarded.
They're not pious. They're not doing any pious actions. They're just leading an ethical life, just doing what they have to do, They follow, but that's not punya. That's just a way of kind of life.
Okay, like, so yeah, that, so they're not accumulating so much sinful activity. Probably they'll be born as a human being. Probably.
Would that be anything related to spirituality or no?
Well, if they're atheists, then they may not advance. I mean, I can't say, but they may not advance to swaga, because the demigods are theists, they're devotees. Mm-hmm. So if you're an atheist, you wouldn't really fit in there. But if they're not performing sinful activity, then they'll probably just become human beings again. But they're just continuing the cycle of birth and death. You know, just chewing the chewed, Prahlad Maharaj says.
If one is an atheist, I think he will do sinful activities. What else he can do if somebody is
atheist? Yeah, but he might, like, he just might be a pious man. He just does, you know. Like that.
Because if he's not afraid of God, he can do anything.
That's true. Any other points? Okay, so we'll begin the session. Thus he has to pass 99,000 yojanas within 2 or 3 moments, and then he is at once engaged in the torturous punishment which he is destined to suffer. Ajayapur, would you like to read it?
One yojana is calculated to be 8 miles, and he has to pass along a road which is therefore as much as 792,000 miles. Such a long distance is passed over within a few moments only. The subtle body is covered by the constable so that the living entity can pass such a long distance quickly and at the same time tolerate the suffering. This covering, although material, is of such fine elements that material scientists cannot discover what the coverings are made of. To pass 792,000 miles within a few moments seems wonderful to the modern space travelers. They have so far traveled at a speed of 18,000 miles per hour. But here we see that a criminal passes 792,000 miles within a few seconds only, although the process is not spiritual but material.
So, what are the points?
Does the soul immediately travel 2 or 3 seconds after the death, or he travels after 12 days, 14 days? This is a Shraddha.
He's already began to travel. He's already begun his travels. He's not waiting around at that point.
So the death.
Yeah, as soon as you die, then you begin moving to your next destination. Unless you are some subtle, like, ghostly form, then you may hover around, stay around the area like that. That's why we cremate the body, because the soul may be attached. If he's in some subtle form, then he may be attached to a state. Mm-hmm. That's therefore it is cremated.
From the time we are told that till the 11th day a ceremony is performed, the soul is hovering around the house, and then it's only on the 11th day the Vedic ceremony is performed, then the soul starts its onward journey wherever it is.
But I think that is in terms of if he is, as far as I understand, that is in terms of if he is in a subtle form, like a ghostly form. Because the Bhagavad Gita does say here that he begins to travel towards Yamaloka. When you read in the sixth canto of Ajamil, Ajamya was being taken from his body at the time of death by the Yamadutas. So it seems like at that time, that's when he began. Well, it didn't seem like he was waiting 11 days and then they were beginning to take him. So my understanding is that, and I think Prabhupada mentions this, that, you know, as soon as you die, then you begin to travel to your next, like that. Specifically, this is as far as I understand, specifically it is said that the Shraddha ceremony is performed, or the Pinda ceremony is performed, for a living entity who may be still hovering around in a ghostly form like that. But my understanding, if that is not happening, then one is beginning to go. Any other points?
We find Lord Hanuman had left 100 yojanas to reach Lanka, and here it is 99,000 yojanas.
Long way. Any other points?
Usually they say 7 months after that the soul will die. It has to cross this Vaitarani Nadi or something, and then after 7 months, the soul will take it another body.
Where's that?
7 months.
Yeah, but where is that said?
It says in somewhere I read in the Bhagavad.
No, it says after 7 months, the child within the womb is in the next few chapters, he wakes up.
In the next chapter.
Yeah, that's said, but it doesn't say that it takes 7 months to go into the womb. I think so. So Prabhupada is describing here that the subtle body of the living entity is beyond sense perception. Mind, intelligence and ego is beyond our central perception. You cannot see it, you cannot touch it, you cannot taste it, you cannot smell it, you cannot hear it. But we understand the mind, the intelligence and the ego are there by their symptoms. And because we know they're there, then they are carrying the living entity to his next destination. The living entity travels through the subtle body. When you go to, if you go, if an impious soul who goes to Yamaloka is carried there through the subtle body, it is the subtle body that carries one to the heavenly planets, to the higher destination, to the lower destination. So therefore, when you come into this material world, we have the same subtle body as when we first came into the material world. We've been here for billions, millions of lifetimes. And the same subtle body is carrying our soul continuously. But our gross body changes, the external body changes. So in the modern world, they don't understand about this subtle body. They don't understand that it exists. But the subtle body is there. It keeps the soul covered and it takes us to our next destination. So our mind changes. Even in this lifetime, our mind has changed so much. If I think back 10 years from now, now I'm 38, if I think back to when I was 28, my mind was very different. I had different ideas about the world, I had different ideas about life, I had so many different ideas. Now it's changed. And another 10 years, it'll probably change. And then another 10 years, it'll probably change. So, the subtle body is always changing. And then whatever you're thinking of at the time of death, whatever consciousness you have developed, that will take you to your next destination. The subtle body will, the mind will take you. Krishna says, yam yam babi smaran baba. Smaran, or memory, is a function of the mind, of the subtle body, of the intelligence, like that. So whatever you're thinking at the time of death, then that takes you to the next destination. So this is not perceptible by the modern world, but it doesn't mean it doesn't exist, doesn't happen. Just like I just spent 1 week with my uncle, who's very argumentative. He debates, just like, you know, I like him, but I feel tired after being with him. he debates everything. Everything. Just going to debate.
Making you strong, bro. Just making you strong by debating, really becoming strong in knowledge to defeat somebody.
Yeah, no, I'm just becoming tired. But the point is that we have to accept Vedic authority. That's the point. You can say, well, these things do not exist because I do not perceive them, but the fact is they do exist, and an intelligent person accepts these things. An intelligent person will accept that there is a subtle body. An intelligent person will accept that there is life after death. There is reincarnation. Prabhupada explains that in this section. You can say, well, I did the activity, but I will not take the reaction for the activity. It doesn't matter. And that's what the modern world says. You know, just enjoy yourself. You don't have to worry. No, you do have to worry. Because whatever you do, there's a reaction for all those activities. Right? And there is a subtle body which takes you to your next destination. So therefore, the most fortunate souls are those who accept Vedic authority. This has been explained in the previous chapter by Kapila Dev. Now, there are many different types of species of life, and amongst humans, there are many types of humans, but the most superior is the one who accepts the Vedas. Now, that is superior knowledge. Just like my uncle, a very intelligent man, knows so many things, but does not accept Vedic authority so easily. Accepts some things, but does not accept it. So, it's still unfortunate. Consciousness is still not properly developed like that. And therefore, yeah, he's a fairly good person, but he will have to suffer something. You know, he's not fully given up meat eating and these kind of things, so this means that there'll be reactions there. Still, the reactions will have to come. Because if one accepts Vedic authority, then one will accept these things which are taught, the subtle things which are taught within this, within the Vedas, such as transmigration of the soul, such as the law of karma. These things exist, such as the subtle body moving a step. Just because we cannot perceive all these things, we cannot perceive our next life, we cannot perceive our previous life, we cannot perceive the law of karma so easily or our subtle body, it doesn't mean these things do not exist. An intelligent person can see through Shastra Chakshus that these things do exist. Obviously there's a next life. Obviously there was a previous life. Obviously I'm suffering in this life because of my previous activities. Obviously, if I perform sinful activities in this life, I will suffer again in the future. All those things are known, and this comes through the Vedas. So, the one who accepts the Vedic authority is the most fortunate personality within, out of all human beings. Like that's all.
Can I say clarification?
Yes.
Bhanuswami Maharaj, in one of his lectures, said that somebody's consciousness does not change even after thousands of years. So he was giving an example wherein in about 5,000 years ago, not 5,000, some 3,000 years ago, in a pyramid, a couple of them died in a crash, some boulders, everything fell down on them and they died. And that person has passed through so many lifetimes and has appeared now as an American lady. And she keeps uttering in Arabic language the incidences which happened to her and how she was killed. So, quoting that particular example, Bhanuswami Maharaj says that things don't change even after thousands of years. Whereas you brought out the situation that in 10 years also somebody's thinking consciousness changes.
Yeah, but it does. My point is that your consciousness does change. Your mind does change. We do fluctuate through the modes. You know, we are. The mind is perpetually changing. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the modes are always struggling for dominance over each other. So we see our mind does change. It does develop. You know, like that. What Bhanuswami is explaining is that those memories, because we have the same subtle body, all the memories of the previous lifetime are within that subtle body. So therefore sometimes things bubble up from our previous, or if you regress someone, then you can understand what was in the previous lifetime also. Sometimes these things can be done. But I don't think there's a contradiction there. Anyone else have a point?
You're telling about your uncle.
Mm.
So what was his background? What was he doing all his life?
He's a hippie.
In terms of work. But in terms of work, what was he doing?
He's a builder. A very smart guy in a lot of ways, very smart. He's living in a forest in Tasmania. He has 150 acres, which he owns. Doesn't have any mortgage, nothing. It's in the forest, totally. So there's no electricity. He has solar power. And his water comes from the rain or from the river. He has a river which runs through, which is a pure water in Tasmania. It's pure. And he only cooks on fire because he doesn't have any electricity or gas to heat everything up. So everything is cooked on fire, everything is heated by fire. and he grows many fruits and nuts and vegetables like that, living very naturally. So this is a very smart guy in a lot of ways, but he thinks he's too intelligent. That's the point. So when I tell him certain things, he says, no, this cannot be. And he argues with me back and forth and back and forth.
Why I was asking, because in 1973 I went to a place called Golconda in Tasmania, and similar situation. The gentleman and his wife, very pious people, and big land, 100 acres nearly, and what a beautiful life they were.
Yeah, his life's very good because he doesn't have a job, he doesn't need a job because he's built houses in the past and he sold them, so he's just living off the money. He doesn't have a job, doesn't need to make. Lives very simply. His life is he's a very good example in many ways. But there's a certain point, if you don't understand these certain Vedic principles, then your life is incomplete.
What's the best way to change some kind of...
I'm still trying to work it out. No, you just have to preach nicely. I just preach to him. I just say, listen, this is what I believe. If you don't believe it, doesn't bother me in any way, shape or form, but this is what I just preached to him, and I tell him this is what I believe, and I can see that he was gradually getting changed, and we give him prasadam. Vedapuri is cooking prasadam, giving it to him. He's read the Bhagavad Gita like that, and he chants, he says Keshava, Keshava, Keshava.
I think you've changed him a lot.
Yeah, no, he's changing, he's getting purified. Absolutely. Slowly. But the point is that if you don't accept the Vedic authority, then your life is not perfect yet. It's only when you begin to accept Vedic authority your life becomes perfect.
What shape does the subtle body take? Or does it retain the shape of the gross body?
Mm. It retains or it takes the shape of the gross body which it enters into. Therefore...
At the time of leaving, does it retain the shape of the gross body it's leaving from?
Yeah, until it takes the next form like that. That's why you see, that's what a ghost is. A ghost is a disembodied spirit. Prabhupada describes that if someone commits suicide, then if you commit suicide at the age of 30, but you're meant to live until 70, then for those 40 years you have to stay in a subtle body, 7 miles above the earth, is described later in the Bhagavatam. The ghosts live 7 miles above the earth in their own atmosphere. So you stay in the subtle body, living in that particular atmosphere for those 40 years until it's time to enter into your next gross body. So that's why you see sometimes when people see ghosts, they have a particular form. That's the form of their previous life. But when you enter into your new body, you take that particular. The subtle body takes that gross
shape.
Like that.
One thing, once a person dies, then all description is given that the Yamadutas are dragging into the hot sun. So he leaves the gross material body, isn't it? He will go through subtle. So how the punishment, if there's another body or something like that?
It's a subtle body. Mm-hmm. A subtle body.
Subtle body means it's just made up of mind, intelligence.
Yeah, but you're suffering because you're identifying with that subtle form. The form is subtle, so mind is more subtle. It's like if you have a form made of air. Air is more subtle, but it's a form still, like that. So then if you have the body made of mind, it's a form, and you identify with that form, you think, oh, this is my body still. But then you're suffering through it. So it's very...
I had the same question when I was reading. I had the same question as what Mataji had. One example is dreams. Sometimes we get nightmares or dreams. Then we know that the pain was not there, but during the dream, we still undergo the pain, as if it's real. So which means it's not a gross body, it's something in the mind. So the mind can generate a sensation.
Definitely. And even when we experience pain or suffering in the gross body, it's very much experienced in the mind, like that, through the subtle body, like that. Because you see sometimes you can become detached from your gross body. Yeah, if you learn this... out of detachment, you become detached from the gross body. So very much the suffering goes on in the mind, in the subtle body.
In the conditioned state, we are identifying ourselves with this mind imprisoned possible. So that's the real problem. Otherwise,
gross body is just that matter.
You
can't perceive anything.
Just a dead matter.
Okay, so read the next verse. He is placed in the midst of burning pieces of wood, and his limbs are set on fire. In some cases, he is made to eat his own flesh or have it eaten by others. Achara Prabhu, can you read this?
From this verse, through the next three verses, the description of punishment will be narrated. The first description is that the criminal has to eat his own flesh, burning with fire, or allow others like himself who are present there to eat. In the last great war, people in concentration camps sometimes ate their own stool. So there is no wonder that in the Yama Sadhana, the abode of Yamaraj, one who had a very enjoyable life eating others' flesh has to eat his own flesh.
What is the point?
Stay away from me.
There is hardly anyone who will not eat his flesh after the death, according to this.
Yeah, well, anyone who eats their flesh.
Now in the plan, on this planet, there is hardly anyone who is a pure vegetarian, so therefore, by and large, everyone would eat their own flesh after death.
That's what it says. That's what it says. Hands up if you were enjoying eating your own flesh.
Our blood sometimes, for women, if the pin pricks here, you might take the blood and it's salty.
It hands up if you would enjoy eating your own flesh. You would enjoy it.
I had a question to ask.
That's different. First, you have to answer my question. Hands up if you would enjoy eating your own flesh. Just check. Okay. So, this is the position of someone who is a flesh eater. You take them to the abode of Yamaraj, and on the way there, then this will be described more vividly in the fifth canto. This is just a short precursor. This actually, the details are actually given in detail in the fifth canto when you have a darshan of the hellish planets, like that. But if someone is a flesh eater, the punishment for that person is taken to a hellish situation by the Yamadutas, and his flesh will be cooked while you're still in your body. Your own flesh will be cooked while you're in your body, and then the Yamadutas will rip that flesh from your body, that cooked flesh, and then make you eat it. No, this is hell, like that. But this is what is awaiting the meat eaters. It says in the fifth canto, for one who slays a cow, then you must suffer in hell for as many lifetimes as there are hairs on the back of that cow. Mm-hmm. Okay. These things are mentioned within the Bhagavatam. So these hellish sufferings are very intense. Okay. So they're meant to make, these descriptions are given in the Bhagavatam to breed detachment. Devahuti says, please make me detached. By hearing this, we should get full detachment from the material world, from sinful activity.
Now, I'm wondering, there is only a subtle body going, there is no flesh, so where is the flesh to be eaten?
Because you think that you have a gross body, means subtle body, means you still think you have a form, like that. So it is subtle, everything is subtle at that point, but it's like having a gross body because you're still identifying with the body. You still think you have that same body. So even though it's all happening on a subtle platform now, it's still, you're actually feeling as if it was happening to the gross body. The sensation is the same. It's a very hard thing to understand, actually, because I mean, now you're dealing with a subtle world, subtle existence. So it's, for our minds to understand, it's very difficult. But that's what happens.
Many people from even if they're following the Bible or the Quran, they eat meat, Prabhu, they don't know. Even on Bakrit, they cut the meat and they cut the water and eat it.
Mm.
And then all of them, they're going to hell, they don't even know that.
Yeah. So we have to preach. Whenever Prabhupada met the Christians, he would say, thou shalt not kill.
Mm.
That was all he preached to the Christians, basically.
But he took a dead fish and then
Yeah, it's not actually like that in the Bible. That somehow that's been added. Jesus, when he gave the
bread on, I think.
Yeah, when he did the Sermon on the Mount, which means he gave a very famous speech on one of the mountains. It is said that at that time he took bread from a basket and he brought out unlimited bread and he fed everyone to show a miracle like that. So now in the Bible quite often it says he took bread and fish. But apparently, according to the original text, that's why we don't follow the Bible so much. I was explaining this to my uncle all week, that the reason we don't follow the Bible so much is because it's all misinterpreted now. Like now it says things, but I don't think those things were actually there. Jesus only ate prasad. Jesus is Vaishnav. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, he said that Jesus is Shakta Vaishavatam. Shakta Vaishavatam means he's pure devotee of Krishna.
Empowered
devotee of Krishna. So he's pure Vaishnava, he only takes prasad.
But it's very normal to eat meat, very casually they eat meat.
Yeah, so the whole world's in ignorance now. So we have to preach.
So those people who eat meat and they undergo the selfish punishment, and then again they have to come back as a tiger or something and then again eat flesh.
And I was told they have those carriers, they get automatically
promoted. No for animals.
As a tiger, he has to eat flesh, so...
Prabhupada explains this in the last couple of purports in this section. He mentions about this point.
But the
problem
is
that
tiger population is not increasing.
Yeah, well, there's other type of living increasing. You tried to trick me, Sheikh Abhi. You have to try harder. Your tricks are not good enough yet. Thank you for trying. I do appreciate that. You still have to see me at the end of the class.
I can see the scale there.
I was trying to pay out the comments by technical
manager. Hare, everyone, yeah, please come.
I was trying to have the same argument with my technical manager by afternoon. So his logic is like this. It says, in those days, early days, there was no refrigeration. And hence, putrefied meat will become putrefied, and hence it must not eat any meat. But now we have refrigeration, so now we can eat meat.
Yeah, of course we can. But this is the point that Prabhupada's making in this section of the Bhagavad Gita. You can do anything you like, but if you say there are no reactions afterwards, then this is avijja or ignorance of that. Just like I said to my uncle, I said, it's okay if you want to eat meat, but you have to kill the animal yourself. And he agreed with this point, but still he doesn't do it. But he did agree with that point. And they said, yes, that is true. You know, if you want to kill the animal, if you want to eat meat, then you kill the animal yourself. Don't pay someone else to do it like that. And he said, yes, that's true. That should be the way it is, but I mean, they don't do it. It's all, see, that's the point is these days people just talk. What's their point? What's the use of even talking? You know, you just talk and talk and talk and talk and you argue and argue and argue and you just do whatever you want anyway. Yeah, you agree with me, yes, that's the point, but then you don't do it, so what's the point? At least we're devotees, we say what we say and what we do. The achar and the prachar must be the same.
He's not vegetarian,
no? No, he's not.
That's the reason that it needs to be allowed in
Okay, now it becomes more hellish. His entrails are poured out. Now what does entrails mean?
Intestines.
Right? His entrails are poured out by the hounds and vultures of hell, even though he is still alive to see it. I mean, can you imagine lying there? Right, and there's dogs and vultures ripping your intestines from your body, and you're watching this taking place, and you can't die. You have to stay alive and watch it. And the pain you must be suffering. And he is subjected to torment by serpents, scorpions, gnats, and other creatures that bite him. I don't know what a gnat is. So.
That's a bird, isn't it?
Maybe it is. I don't know what it is.
Like a
vulture.
It's a
bird.
Bird. Next, his limbs are lopped off and torn asunder by elephants. I mean, you can imagine this. You know, you're being... your arms are being ripped off by elephants who are ripping your arms off. and you are hurled from hilltops, and he is also held captive, either in water or in a cave. Now this is hell. Now, this is what it is like in hell.
One thing, like some people who are really doing this type of activities, they are made to read this also, but still they don't
change.
Why is that?
Well, it's because of ignorance. Ignorance is the base of disease in the material world.
You don't get scared like that.
Don't what?
You don't feel like, you know, this I'm going to face, let me like become now.
Yeah, there's no shraddha, no faith which is developed. So at this point in time, they think this is just mythology or stories or something.
It's not
true. It's horrible. Well, you know, all these people are going like that to this abode.
They don't know what to be feared,
what's
not to be feared.
Mm. Yeah. Men and women whose lives were built upon indulgence in illicit sex life are put into many kinds of miserable conditions in the hells known as Tamisra, Under Tamisra, and Ro River. So this is described in Canto 5 in detail. Now it's not mentioned what it's like, but in Canto 5 it says what it's like in each of these places like that. So, what of a Bandhu Prabhu? Can you read that?
Materialistic life is based on sex life. The existence of all the materialistic people who are undergoing severe tribulation for existence is based on sex. Therefore, in the Vedic civilization, sex life is allowed only in a restricted way. It is for the married couple and only for getting children. But when sex life is indulged for sense gratification, illegally and illicitly, both the man and the woman avoid severe punishment in this world or after death. In this world also, they are punished by virulent diseases like syphilis and amoria. And in the next life, as we see in the passage of Srimad Bhagavatam, they are put into different kinds of hellish condition to suffer. In Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, illicit sex life is also very much condemned. And it is said that one who produces children by illicit sex life is sent to hell. It is confirmed here in the Bhagavatam that such offenders are put into hellish condition of life in Tamisra, Andha Tamisra, and Bhagavatam.
Mm. So what are the points which are made?
So the ultimate thing is sex life, that is the shackles of the mind, and that will lead to all this different things, going to all these hellish times.
Mm. Is the main attachment in the material world. Any other points?
It is amazing from a well-wishing parent sends his child to a hellish condition by performing his son's or daughter's marriage. Because illicit sex, you are required to have have sex only for children, which hardly happens initially in the beginning of married life. And knowingly, we'll be sending children to a hellish situation if this is what is happening.
So therefore they have to be trained properly.
But the senses are not under your control. Even in spite of good training, the initial phase of married life tends to involve sense gratification in that activity.
But for a devotee, then they, even though they may commit a vulnerable activity, and they may fall down, but they'll rectify themselves in due course of time. They're not like a non-devotee. A non-devotee will perform the activity, but the non-devotee will not have remorse. But the devotee may perform the activity initially, as you said, but then he'll feel repentant and he'll rectify his consciousness. And Krishna will purify him. He won't have to go through all this hellish suffering. But for the gross materialist, the Vedic culture is based on semen retention, retaining one's semen. And demoniac culture, asura culture, is based on excretion of semen. The more semen that you excrete, the more successful you have become. Vedic culture is the more semen you retain, the more successful you have become. If you are a renunciant, if you are brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyasi, or as Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur says, Grihastha Brahmachara, then that is the perfection of Vedic culture, to retain one's semen. Because when one retains one's semen, then it travels into one's brain and makes the brain very fertile, which is necessary for spiritual progress. But when one discharges the semen, then they become very mentally weak in their old age. And you see, you meet sometimes the old man, they have Alzheimer's disease and they're in there shaking and, you know, like that, and they have no ability to understand or to retain things, especially spiritual life. Spiritual knowledge, it requires a great deal of intelligence and memory in order to understand this and retain it, like that. So therefore one must practice celibacy. This has been emphasized again and again and again throughout this canto, because it's necessary if you want to understand this deeper spiritual knowledge and advance in Krishna consciousness. So these things are being taught in here.
Spiritual life and sex life
go into the system. Prabhupada says. Yeah. So that is the nature of spiritual life. One must be very strict in regards to this. And in order to become strict, you have to develop a higher taste. And especially it is for the grihasthas, it is recommended that the grihasthas must perform deity worship. They must become attached to the deity. Just like when I was speaking to my uncle, he said, I want to serve God, but I do not know how. And then I explained to him that that's because you must have a personalistic conception of God. Because if God is impersonal, which he believes, then how can you serve that impersonal entity? But if God is a personality, then you can serve him, because then he appears in the deity. And he actually agreed with me and said, yes, this is logical. Like that. But then, once again, okay, it's logical, but then don't do it. Like that. It takes time for people to, lifetimes of people to get to this point. But for us, then we have to engage that propensity to be attached to matter. We have to transfer that attachment to matter to spirit. Therefore, from the opposite sex to the deity. To the form of Krishna, from the form of Maya to the form of Krishna, and then we can transcend this bodily attachment. Otherwise, illicit sexual activity, any sex, then it will simply bind the consciousness to this material world. It is the Prabhupada says in the first purport of the Bhagavatam, he says sex is the active principle of the material creation. It's only sex. My spiritual master said this to me in 1997, I think it was. Active principle in the material world. My spiritual master said to me, he said, it's just sex. He said, everything's just sex, because I was just getting married. You know, it's interesting, actually. It's interesting. Because the point he was making is that, why do we get married? Right? It's just sexual attraction, that's all it is. Right? Subtle or gross sex life, but it's just sex life, that's all it is. Nothing else. It's not romance.
You
know,
somebody
that
they said, oh, to get a partner, you have to have company. But there's a reason of getting
married. Yeah, it's called subtle sex. Yeah, because you're enjoying, right, the association with the opposite sex. Subtle. Okay, you may not be forming the gross activity of sex life, but subtly you're enjoying, right? The man is enjoying the woman, or the woman is enjoying the man. That is maituni bhav, says in the Bhagavatam, is sex life. Okay. Unless you're very, very advanced, but...
One thing I don't understand, like it is said that, like, you know, the main thing is, like, you know, attraction between man and... Then like this way, then nobody should marry like that, or then how can the...
No, Grihastha Ashram means that, okay, you have this attachment, but purified by regulation. That's the Vedic system. Okay, you're attached, but perform it in a regulated activity, in a regulated way, right? Because what happens, you're brahmachari. So then you think, okay, if I get married, I'll be happy. So then you get married, and then you realize, if I was a brahmachari, I'd be happy. Yeah, so then you have to go through it to become detached from it. Right? And my spiritual master said this one time, he said that He said that if you get to the age of 50 and if you're not detached from married life, then you haven't gone, you know, then somehow you've missed the whole point, the whole Vedic point.
Mm.
25 years of marriage, you should have it pretty much out of your system. Well, you should be detached. You should have a spirit of detachment from the material world by the age of 50. You should have, like that. But then, as Russ is pointing out, you have to have a higher taste to transcend.
But then these days people get married at 30 and 35, so it's still 50 years.
Yeah, but then who renounces at 50 in Kali Yuga? So then one time, Upendra Prabhu, who was one of Prabhupada's early disciples,
he came here,
he was the first devotee to come to Australia, him and Bali Madan Prabhu. They had started the movement, in the Hare Krishna movement in Australia. He was one of Prabhupada's early disciples. He was Prabhupada's personal servant. Even at the end, he was Prabhupada's personal servant. At different points in time, he was Prabhupada's servant. So one time, he said to Prabhupada, I want to get married. And there's somewhere in America. And then Prabhupada said, then get married. And he said then, but Prabhupada, you know, who should I marry? And Prabhupada looked out the window and he said, go and find any girl. He said, go and find any girl, get married. And then Upendra was shocked. You know, Prabhupada said like that. He said, just go and find any. He said, but Prabhupada, they're not devotees. And Prabhupada said, so? He said, just get married. And then Upendra said, but Prabhupada, what about love? And Prabhupada said, love. He said love.
No love.
Yeah, Prabhupada said love. Prabhupada said, go and marry any girl. He said, you want to get married? Go and marry. Okay. So the point is, in this material world, this is not, this attraction between the opposite sexes is illusion. And it has to be overcome. And for those who become too much absorbed in sex life, they just suffer. You know, and Prabhupada says in this purport, you'll suffer in this life,
yeah.
Right? And if you will suffer in this life, and then you'll suffer more after death. But people think, oh, there's nothing after death anyway, so what does it matter? Yeah. It's not the fact.
Srila Prabhupada says also about syphilis, AIDS. So many people, millions of people are dying of AIDS.
What's the figure in Africa for people who are HIV positive? 60% or something.
60%.
Yeah, it's something ridiculous.
So they are suffering so much already.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's
it. Must be attachment. No, there is no love. No, material world, there is no love. There is only attachment. There must be some attachment because of gross sense or relation. There is no love.
Okay. Lord Kapila continued, my dear mother, it is sometimes said that can we turn the heater on? Just turn the button. Press it down and then press it again. Yeah. It'll go off, but... Lord Kapila continued, my dear mother, it is sometimes said that we experience hell or heaven on this planet. For hellish punishments are sometimes visible on this planet also. Hell is on earth also, as Kapila Devi is pointing out. It is not something that you simply have to go to in another lifetime or after this lifetime. Just like, you know, in 1993 I went to Africa. We were selling paintings to maintain the temple back then. We went to Africa. But Africa, has anyone ever been there? Not there? You've been there?
Lived there for 6 or 7 years.
6 or 7 years, which country?
Country called Botswana and then in South Africa.
Yeah. So it is hell. Africa is hell. It's just terrible. Just like, it's horrible. The way people live there and the way it is there, it's hell. So there's hell on this earth as well. You know, it's experience. There are countries, just like at the moment I'm reading Indrajumna Swami's diaries, and he's saying that in Poland, he's described what it's like in Poland. It's hell. You know, we're just in what we call the lucky country. Like that, you know, we're not suffering so much in this country, but there's places on this earth which are just hell. People are suffering terribly, like that. So we should not become illusioned or complacent. Because sometimes devotees, when you get into a good situation, you become complacent. I'm enjoying, I don't have to be so serious about spiritual life. You have to be serious about spiritual life at every moment. Don't become complacent as a devotee. Don't become a sense enjoyer. Prabhupada said, be very careful that the spirit of sense enjoyment does not enter in the name of Krishna consciousness. He said this to Tamal Krishnamaraj very early. Be careful the spirit of sense enjoyment does not enter in the name of Krishna consciousness. Yeah, like that. So be very careful. Now Prabhupada says in this purport that the living entity is taken from his gross body, in his subtle body, is taken to hellish situations. Now, if your karma, if you have abused your life as a human, Prabhupada explains this in this section, the lower species of life do not get karma. When a tiger kills another animal, there's no karma. Right? Any animal, any plant, any bird, any reptile, any insect, any fish, there's no karma. Right? That is their karma, that they're born into that lower species. As a human, you accumulate karma. Human form of life is crossroads. Means you can go up or you can go down. The consciousness can elevate or it can degrade. It depends how you live your life. So if someone misuses their life, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, if you live your life as a human being in such a way that you perform sinful activity, the reaction to your karma is you will become a pig, a hog. So Srila Prabhupada explains that then the Yamadutas will take you to a particular hellish planet and they will train you to eat stool. And Korma Prabhu gave a class here in Melbourne many, many years ago. I remember I was a young devotee. And he said, while you're in this hellish planet eating stool, they throw you, it describes in the fifth canon, they throw you in an ocean of stool. And they force you to eat stool for like years on end. But then Korma Prabhu was explaining, after some time, you begin to distinguish between the different stools. Oh, this is a good one. This is not so. And then, as Prabhupada said, it's hell. What is that? So, the pure living entity was originally Krishna's servant, becomes so far away from Krishna that he becomes so degraded in consciousness, like that. And then, when you've trained up and you've developed in the subtle body, when you develop the consciousness of a pig, then you go into the gross body of a pig. And in the gross body of the pig, then you begin to walk around in the gutters, right, and choosing the different types of stool. Just like you see them in Vrindavan, they get in there, into the gutter on the side of the road, and they go through, like, deep, covered in black, right, and just eating stool. And Prabhupada says in the purport, and as has been explained in the previous chapter, the power of Maya is so powerful that you actually think you are enjoying. Right? You actually think this is pleasure. That's how powerful Maya is. Right? Because you want to be away from Krishna, so you think this is good. It's just hellish. The pig is thinking my life is great. After leaving this body, the man who maintains himself and his family members by sinful activity suffers a hellish life, and his relatives suffer also. So this is the important theme which is here in this section of the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada is explaining this purport. You may think you're not going to suffer. That doesn't mean anything. Right? It's irrelevant what you think. It's irrelevant what your conception is. Just like my uncle's been saying to me all week, I think. Who cares what you think? I didn't say that to him, because then when I say that to him, he gets more in his debate. But it doesn't matter. Who cares what I say that to him at one point. It doesn't matter what I think. This is not my opinion. Everything I'm saying to you is not my opinion. I'm nothing. Right? My opinion means absolutely nothing. I didn't know anything before I joined this movement. Right? Everything I'm saying is simply based on the Vedas. That's the authority. Right? So even if you say, right, there's nothing going to happen to me afterwards, or I'm going to go to heaven, like all these people say, I'll go to heaven, or I'll crash a plane into a building and I'll go to paradise, it doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. Right? What the Vedas say, that's what means. That is truth. Right? So therefore the Vedas say that if you abuse this human form of life, you will suffer in the next life. Right? That is the fact.
So would the sinful activity include corruption?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. The whole world is corrupt now. Like Africa as a prime example, it's very corrupt there because the place is in poverty. But all the people in the government have a lot of wealth. Just like it's in Mexico, it's another example. A lot of poverty in Mexico. But all the politicians, it's just known that if you want to become rich, become a politician in Mexico. Because they just, you know, they leave government with millions of dollars in their accounts. Just corruption. So it's, yeah, I know in India. It's everywhere. Yeah. He goes alone to the darkest regions of hell after quitting the present body, and the money he acquired by envying other living entities is the passage money with which he leaves this world. Prabhupada says in the purport that the primary person who commits the simple activity, then he gets most of the reaction. But the point is, if someone's a murderer or a thief, and then that's how he maintains his family, and then the family is using that money, they also get reactions because the money is black. Right? So therefore, there is sin acquired in possessing that money. Just like someone may go and murder someone and take their money. These things happen. So then, all the family members, they didn't do the murders, so they don't get that karma. But because the money was attained in a sinful way, and the money most likely itself has come from sinful sources, then they get reactions for using that money in that way. So Prabhupada says, then what is the point of accumulating money by improper means? Because you may get the money, but you cannot keep the money in your next life. That's all the Bhagavatam is saying. So therefore, as is being explained in this section of the Bhagavatam, as grihasthas we must give charity, but we must attain our money, or we must acquire money by proper means, by honest means. Because if you do it by improper means, then you will get reactions for doing that. It must be taken, it must be acquired by proper means, honest means, Prabhupada is saying, like that. Because there will be reactions. So it's very important for the grihasthas to earn, as Prabhupada explains in his purports, one must acquire money by honest means. Means these days, you know, you just go and get an honest job, you work, you get your money, and done. But not by all impious things. As soon as you go into impious things, immediately reactions come.
Gambling and stuff.
It can be many things.
Whatever you get without endeavor, is that like improper?
Means like what?
Like some people, they get some money, but they don't really work hard, but they get that money. That's
yeah, that's just good karma. Just like my uncle told me, because he has his property, he has 150 acres. So one man came to visit him, and he worked for the government. And he said, if you section off this part of the land, like 40 acres of the 150 acres, which had certain trees on it, which are very rare now in Australia, he said, the government will give you $30,000. So then it just happened. He's just sitting there in his land. This man came. The government, you know, said this is now covenant land, which is, it can never be cut down. These trees can never be cut down by anyone, by him or anyone else. And they gave him $30,000. So that's karma. Karma, he didn't do anything. That's all from his previous life. Something he did piously previously, and then the money came automatically like that. So Srila Prabhupada says in this purport, he says that whatever money we get must be spent to acquire. The way Prabhupada says it, in the end of the final line in this purport, he said, the best use of money, as long as it is within our possession, is to spend it to acquire Krishna consciousness. So our money must be earned by honest means, and then it must be spent to acquire Krishna consciousness. We must do this. Do not be whimsical with money. It's not yours. Understand this point is very hustlers. It's not your money. Right? It must be used to acquire Krishna consciousness. That's what you use your money for. Like that. And acquire it by honest means. Do not be dishonest.
Sometimes in a holy place, we have to use the money in this way to have the darshan of the Lord. Is it simple?
I'm just trying to think of examples of what I do, because I know at some temples we go and we pay to get special darshan or something. Well,
buying an official ticket, there's nothing wrong.
I know that. It's actually interesting because I was listening yesterday. Jayapitaka Swami was saying that Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur was very against this whole process of paying to see the ninis. It's actually wrong. There's nowhere in scripture where it says you have to pay to see the Lord. The Lord's darshan is free. When you come, you should give a donation. That's there. But you should not have to pay to go and see the Lord. That's actually wrong.
And the worst thing is to pay illicitly.
Yeah, well, sometimes we pay to get a special darshan.
That is only an excuse.
To get to the front of the line or something like that. Yeah. But I know, I saw my spiritual master give money for special darshan and so forth. And devotees do it. Like that. I think the point is that...
But if you use that money for the Lord, it's okay. But if you use...
Yeah, that's the whole thing, because sometimes they don't. But... Like that. I think sometimes when I go to India, sometimes I do give, sometimes we do it. We give a little money to get a special darshan or something like that. But I would say do not probably let it happen like too much. Don't get controlled by the whole thing. Because, it's wrong actually. They pay like some temples you go on like for a special darshan. You get a darshan, but there's special things. I'm thinking of different examples. I don't want to mention them, but special things, and then you have to pay 20 rupees just to get the special darshan. And we do it because, you get the special, and it's nice, but it's actually not correct on their side to do it. And I think that we should not do it too much like that. But sometimes, Kali Yuga has become like this. And like I said, I've seen advanced devotees do this. Like sometimes you have to give a little too. The way it's become, but it's not right, and we should not. I just think we should not overindulge it like that.
You know, what happens? Those people earn money by shares.
It's speculation. It's actually gambling.
Gambling.
It's actually gambling, and it's speculation. And some devotees might do it, but be very careful. Be very careful. Some devotees have lost millions of dollars doing that. Millions of dollars. Just be very careful. It's actually, officially speaking, it actually comes under gambling. I know some devotees do it, but be very, very careful. Just be careful, basically. Prabhupada says, earn your money by honest means and spend it to acquire Krishna consciousness. That's our rule, because that's what Prabhupada says here. If we live like that, the point is, if you live like that, you'll be very peaceful. As soon as you get into stocks and shares and estates and real estate and buying and selling, as a grihastha you have to do this, it just causes anxiety in the mind. And those who don't have that, they just live peacefully. It's like my uncle's living in Tasmania. He doesn't have, he owns everything, he has enough money to live, he doesn't need to go and work, and he's peaceful. That's his good part of his life. A certain amount of ignorance is there, but that's a good part. So devotees, we just want to be peaceful. We don't want to, you know, always be thinking, because as soon as you get money, you're always thinking about it, of that in the mind.
Peace formula is the 3-point peace formula. Everything belongs to the Lord. He's a bhokta, rami, sarvalam, proprietor and benefactor.
Okay. Thus, by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the maintainer of kinsmen is put into a hellish condition to suffer for his sinful activities, just like a man who has lost his wealth. Therefore, a person who is very eager to maintain his family and kinsmen simply by black methods certainly goes to the darkest region of hell, which is known as Under Tamishra.
Mentions the black means, it means also an earning not according to one's
dharma
position.
Mm. Yeah, he says that in that purport that we just read, that verse.
That means illegal means. You're working as a brahmana, but you're not qualified actually. You're
to be a brahmana. Yeah. Yeah, that's sinful. Okay. That's why I'm not elaborating the point so much. It's interesting though, because I just read something that the GBC want to develop more Varnashram in ISKCON now. They've been talking about it for years, but they've said it again, they want to do more Varnashram. So we'll see what comes out in the next few years. Okay, read the last verse. Having gone through all the miserable hellish conditions and having passed in a regular order through the lowest forms of animal life prior to human birth and having thus been purged of his sins, one is reborn again as a human being on this earth. So, in this part of the Bhagavatam is described, if one performs sinful activities, he'll be taken by Yamaraj. And Yamaraj and his assistance will train you to enter into a lower birth. And once you enter into that lower birth, you have to transmigrate all the way again for millions of lifetimes possibly to enter back into being a human being. And then once you're a human being again, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, it is imperative that you become Krishna conscious, because Krishna consciousness protects you from falling back into that cycle once again. And it's only by Krishna consciousness that we can elevate out of this cycle of birth and death permanently, once and for all. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.